Welcome to Health Media Now with award-winning author and host Denise Messenger for a lifetime of health empowerment. Live by being in the pink, meaning P stands for being persistent, I stands for using your intuition, N stands for networking, and K stands for obtaining knowledge. Our guests entertain and share cutting-edge information. They share with you what may have taken years to achieve through experience in their field. Become inspired and motivated. Reach your full potential with fascinating tips and products. Receive a lifetime of benefits from authors, doctors, practitioners, healthcare providers, and learn about exciting new products. You asked for it, and we deliver. Now, here's your host, Denise Messenger.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining in today, which is April 28th, 2020. We're doing a special broadcast with Holly Kinley. She's returning to us. She's a fabulous author, an amazing professional in her field, and I just love her book, Daughters Betrayed by Their Mothers, Moving from Brokenness to Wholeness. I read the whole entire book, and it is so helpful. Today's topic is going to be about self-shaming. And just to give you a little background, Holly is a California licensed marriage and family therapist. And she's also a California state licensed teacher. She holds a master's degree in psychology with an emphasis in marriage, family, and child counseling. She's currently located in Rancho Mirage, California. She's authored 9 recovery books, but today we will be discussing her Daughters Betrayed by the Mothers. Hello, Holly. I'm so excited to have you back.
Hello, Denise, and I thank you so much for having me back. I so enjoy our conversations, and I'm looking forward to today's on self-shaming.
Well, let's just get right to it.
Okay. I thought it might be helpful, Denise, for our audience, for me to kind of give a definition, to kind of couch self-shaming so we know what we're all talking about here. So I define self-shaming as either the cognitive or it can be a behavioral practice of self-devaluation. And so it's something that's in our thinking, but it is also can present in our behaving. But the important point is that we self-devalue in these thoughts or in these behaviors. And this usually comes about as the result of feeling shame or being shamed by someone, or it could even be something. And so with that, let me give a few examples. If we're talking with children or even young adults who today are experiencing bullying and cyberbullying, and that's if it's repetitive behavior and they are victims of that, they tend to self-shame with statements like, I'm stupid, I'm ugly, I'm not as popular as them, no one likes me. If we take a look at another example, let's say partners who are in toxic or dangerous relationships or abusive environments, again, this is going on for a period of time, and they internalize that as that something's wrong with them, and so they might self-shame by saying such things as, I don't matter, something's wrong with me, it's all my fault. In the Daughters Betrayed by Their Mothers books, these, of course, were daughters who were raised in abusive, critical, unstable, and sometimes very neglectful environments, and by their mothers, but some also included their fathers as well. And so some of their life messages, which were so powerful, these self-shaming messages were, I don't matter, I'm not lovable, I'm not enough, I don't know why I'm here. So as we can see, self-shaming is a very powerful and a very impactful practice that repetitive thinking or behaving thing that we do.
Mm-hmm. Are most people conscious that they're practicing this?
You know, what I have found, Denise, is that, of course, when we're young and we're growing up, we aren't conscious of it. We're taking in our life experiences. What we do kind of tend to know that there is a conflict many times between what we're being told or what we're being taught or what we even perceive, what our value or our worth should be, and then what we're experiencing inside and how we're being treated. So there's that conflict of how things are supposed to be and what we're feeling. But I find that most people don't usually think about the degree of their self-shaming or how it's impacting them. And this isn't mm-hmm. everyone, but I just look at my clients who I've worked with over the years, is that many times that's what brings them in. And again, they may not really be verbalizing that, but very quickly, because I'm listening for it and I'm picking up on it and I reflect it back to them, then they begin to see, oh yes, this is the dialogue I'm having with myself. And they may not even early on be able to pinpoint how that's impacting them on a lot of different levels. So it usually takes somebody reflecting it back in a safe environment for them to become cognizant of if they're doing that and how much they're doing it and how it's impacting them.
If they're mothers themselves and they're undergoing therapy, change the pattern with their own children?
News is yes. Right now in my practice, I have and have had for almost a couple of years now for almost all females, and I love working with males too, so I want to put that out there. And a number of them are mothers, and a couple are grandmothers. And when they came in, they have said, you know, once we start recognizing and naming and identifying these self-shaming messages, or what I often refer to as life messages, because there can be other kinds of messages that they are working through as well, is that they once they identify what's going on with them and what that source is, they either want to work on themselves, but they don't want to repeat the pattern. And many times it's when a female becomes a mother, or when she is triggered at a certain age where she started experiencing abusive behaviors, that she comes in, sometimes not being really totally cognizant of why, but comes in because she senses that something is not right, it's not working for her, and she wants to change what's going on with her, and then, again, not repeat it.
Takes a lot of work.
Yes. Yes, it does. And it especially takes a lot of work, and this is part of the insidious nature of self-shaming behaviors, is that if the individual wants to stay in relationship with the person or persons who are shaming him and her, it's very, very difficult work. It can be done. I want to put that out there. It can be done, but
it is possible.
It's extremely difficult. Yes.
Well, you would have some people would have to change their entire environment.
Yes, you know, and again, depending, if we look back at the Daughters Betrayed by Their Mothers book, is that all of the daughters weren't able to even begin to address their injuries and injustices, and some of them weren't even, as we've talked about, even really aware of them and how it was impacting them. But they knew that they needed to get out of their environments. And so they all left home at about age 18. Bettina, the last chapter, was the only daughter who stayed a couple years longer. She was from Germany, and she needed to attend the level of school that goes beyond high school, and so she was staying at home for a couple more years. One other daughter, her mom lost Alejandra, her mother lost custody of her, and her father raised her, and so there was minimal contact, but there was still an unhealthy system in place. So yes, it does take being able to, I mean, it's easier if you can remove yourself from the situation. However, many of the daughters didn't start to really do their heavy and their deep work till as they went to college, moved on into their careers and in relationships. And here's the key, Denise, is they found that their interpersonal relationships or even their careers, that they were struggling. They weren't able to really fully be who they wanted to be and have healthy relationships. And so then they started entering into their different kinds of recovery methodologies and such. So it is easier, but it's still hard work. In my prior betrayal book, The Breaking Through Betrayal and Recovering the Peace Within, I have a whole section on in the latter part of the book, in the second part of the book, about what I call selective investment. And because many times we can't, you know, ghost or completely disown, and we don't want to, family members. But, and this comes after a lot of other work. I mean, individuals have to do their other healing work before they are even ready or willing to get to a place where they're going to choose how much, they're going to select how much of themselves they're going to invest into another person. And that might sound strange or weird to people, but as long as we continue to give away our worth, we teach people how to treat us. And if we continue to accept being mistreated by others, then we're going to continue to self-shame and self-devalue. And so it is hard work, but we can learn to, here's the key, Denise. So what we have to do in our healing work is first learn how to invest, trust, and believe in ourselves first and in our own well-being. And with that, years of work and years of months, sometimes years of work, when we come more empowered, we're not going to, if you will, tolerate unacceptable behaviors. And so, and in part of that is that we're not going to invest ourselves into those, what I call unworthy attachments.
Mm-hmm. Well, how does self-esteem mold into this?
It's everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, when we are growing up and when we're forming our beliefs about ourselves and our worth, by no later than age 5, we are kind of, it may not, of course, we're so young, be really a conscious thing that we're doing, but mm-hmm. we're experiencing life, we're growing up, and we're getting from our primary caregivers and others who are entrusted with our well-being within our environments, we're getting messages to us about our worth and our value. Do I matter? Am I important? Am I enough? And our teachers, if you will, all those people externally, and they can be other things as well, too,
mm-hmm.
are letting us know that. So everything is based in our worth and in our value. And if that isn't affirmed and validated as we grow and develop, then we of course, are not going to have a strong sense of identity, of esteem, of mattering, of belonging. It all goes to that core of worth and value.
So as a mother, how do you instill these values into your children so that they have a higher sense of self-esteem?
Well, there's so many things that we can do. My latest book, I just want to mention this because it goes to this question, is called Pilates for Parenting. And it was actually inspired, Denise, by my work that I did on the daughter's book. So it's called Pilates for Parenting, Stretch Yourself and Strengthen Your Family. And after doing that heavy, heavy work with the daughter's book, I wanted to take the lessons that I was reminded of as a mother and what the daughters also taught me and teaches the audience by learning about what, and I say we because I'm chapter one in the book, but I wanted to turn it into something really positive, and I needed to do that after finishing the daughter's book. So what I say in the book is that everything we say and do as parents matters, and everything we don't say and do matters. And the first chapter is called, you know, are you present for your child? Are you present and available for your child? And one of the things that I discovered from the daughter's research was that the mothers were unwilling, unable, or in some instances, incapable of showing up for their daughters in the ways that their daughters needed them. That's not an excuse. That's just a broad, you know, explanation. Mm-hmm. Unable, mm-hmm. unwilling, or incapable. You know, many of the mothers, as you know, Denise, had some pretty severe disorders like bipolar.
Yes.
And such. So in that is that we as mothers and as fathers, we have a responsibility to take care of our issues, of our mental health, of our physical health, of our well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the number one thing I have in that chapter. There's two or three things, but that's our responsibility, is to be open and to assess that and to take care of that if we can't be willing and capable of taking care of our children.
Excellent point. So as we get back into the nature of self-shaming, what makes it so difficult to address?
Oh, Denise, thank you for asking that, because this is such an important point, such an important question, is that self-shaming is one of the most insidious and injurious aspects about it, is that it's shrouded in secrecy and in silence. I mean, first of all, who wants to just, you know, go out and tell people I'm self-shaming or I feel this way about myself? But putting that aside, is that what happens is that most individuals who are self-shaming don't feel safe to share it, because the person who is shaming them is usually a person of authority or of power or of influence. And so, for example, in the daughter's cases, they weren't safe to share it. If they did, they were further shamed or blamed or risked some type of repercussions. So first of all, it's not safe to share. Secondly, is that many individuals who do share are told to either toughen up, you know, get over it, take it like a man, or, you know, what's wrong with you, just, you know, whatever, again, they're shamed. And so they feel, they internalize that, and they feel really weak, and they're embarrassed. Again, that leads to another self-shaming message. It's like, something's wrong with me because I can't endure this. I can't, I'm not strong enough. They're, you know, I'm being told that I need to get over it. So it's kind of a vicious cycle. And in that, if we never, as a child or a young adult or even an adult, have that safe space to self-check that self-shaming message with someone, person say, that is just absolutely not true. You know, why would you think that? Let's take a look at that. Who's saying that to you? And you know, so you have no one to self-check it with, or you're not, you don't feel safe to. And so over the years, it's such a repetitive pattern that we get into, is just constantly that obsessive self-shaming, reinforcing it in ourselves, and that becomes our truth about ourselves, and we have no way of really getting our real truth out there, and as I said, processing it with someone. So that those are some of the reasons. And then I want to put out this next one, Denise, because it's so important, is that, especially in the daughter's book, is mm-hmm. that the daughters did not speak up, and they kept it silent and secret because of the cultural, ethnic, spiritual, societal norms regarding mothers and motherhood. We are to respect our mothers. We are to regard them. Denise, I want to share a little story with you.
Great.
It's been almost about a year and a half ago, I was speaking to a chapter in the Pasadena area, and it was a California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. It was one of their chapters. And I share that it was in Pasadena because it was a very large chapter. The workshop was full. It was on maternal betrayal, analysis, and implications for intervention. The audience was also extremely diverse, and I bring that up for a specific reason, which I'll share in just a moment. So I'm giving the workshop, and throughout this workshop, I do set aside some pause points for audience members to ask questions. This is heavy material, sensitive material, tender materials. I want to, you know, check in with them. Denise, during the whole workshop, no one asked one question, except right before the very end, one participant raised her hand and she said, I was just curious, were any of the daughters that you interviewed adopted? And I said no, and, you know, thanked her for the question and finished up the workshop. At the end of the workshop, I always make myself available to audience members if they want to chat or ask questions. In this ballroom that I was in, at the end of the workshop, there was a line from where I was standing at the front almost all the way to the back.
Oh my gosh.
Mostly females, some males, and one at a time, they came up to me with tears in their eyes, telling me they just needed a hug. And they whispered things to me like this, Denise. No one's ever spoken about this before. I'm from South Korea. I'm Korean, and we don't talk about this. The next person, I'm from Spain. We don't dare talk about this, about our mothers. Thank you. I'm from a huge Italian family. We wouldn't ever talk about this. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that's my point, is that not only are all there, the repressive pieces within our own family systems, but there are these societal norms and culture norms, as I've just illustrated.
Mm-hmm. Excellent illustration. Heartbreaking. Yeah. I don't know how you carried that out of there with you.
It's knowing that, well, it is very heavy. The workshop is heavy. that in and of itself is heavy. And Denise, you know, I don't want to minimize it for a second because, of course, I have to take care of myself before I go into a workshop like that, implement self-care after a workshop like that. And I do have to say that the two-year study, the 2 years that it took me to interview the daughters and to write the book, that taught me a lot about self-care and working with this issue and helping the folks that I help, in, not only in workshops, but in my private practice as well.
Well, I'm speechless.
I know. You know what? Denise, kind of add to that is that it's just a related point. And when I say this, I don't ever want to minimize, and I don't minimize anyone's experience because one incident of shaming is too much. So what I want to say is that the longer that someone waits, that they, you know, they're if they're hearing this today and they are self-shaming, that, you know, if it's been 20 years, if it's been 30 years, if it's been 40 years, is that it is really, really hard work because the longer you have done that is that you, those have become your truths about yourself. And yet, at the same time, if they read the daughter's book, if they listen to me right now, and right now I happen to have all female clients for whatever reason, I, like I said, I do enjoy working with males, and most of them came in for some other reason, but then as we started to peel away these self-shaming life messages, it does usually go to some primary caretaker in their environment who a lot of the shaming came from or abuse or whatever, however we're going to package that. And they are working so hard. I have a client or I had, she's finished up now, but she came in and she's in her late 60s. Never been in counseling before, and for almost 2 years has worked incredibly hard, and she is doing beautifully. So it can be done. I just want to put that out there.
Well, let's talk about unworthy attachments.
Okay, yes. Talk about, and when I'm speaking on this topic, is that as we've been talking about, many of our sources that bring about self-shaming are external. Okay, that just makes sense. They come from our primary caregivers. They come from other environments of betrayal, and also today, social media plays a huge part in that. So I don't want to minimize that at all. At the same time, I do put into a category that some of the self-shaming comes from our belief systems and from our choices and from our unworthy, what I call unworthy attachments. And I've kind of alluded to this a bit, but it's super important. So I identify unworthy attachments as any time we invest into any unhealthy relationship where we allow others to devalue, diminish, and demean us in any way. Now, that could be an abusive relationship, a codependent relationship, a controlling relationship. And I do want to say, Denise, right up front, that with children who cannot get out of these environments, or young people, or even in adult relationships, of course, there are many factors that play in that individuals cannot get out of their environment or their circumstances. So, I mean, I just want to make sure I put that out there. On the other hand, is that, again, this goes back to our core worth and value. We are hardwired for connection. At birth, we start to form attachments, and that's how we get that sense of belonging and that we matter and all of that. And we need those needs to continue to be met. And so when we continue to attach ourselves to people who don't find us worthy, then we continue, of course, to get damaged by them, and we continue to self-shame. What happens is that we keep trying to prove our worth to this person, or this might be a career or a job or something else like that too. And this is the hard part, Denise, that this other person or this other thing, organization, whatever it might be, doesn't find us worthy. And yet we continue to try to prove our worth to them. In the daughter study, there were a couple of, I call them life messages, but the daughters, we're talking about self-shaming. One of the daughters, I think it was Alejandra, kept saying, I have to sacrifice myself in order to make other people happy. And she was the parentified adult in the household. She was always having to take care of others. And so were many of the other daughters as well, because they didn't have these functioning mothers and many times under-functioning fathers as well. So if you grow up with that belief system that you have to sacrifice yourself in order to take care of others, then of course you're going to find yourself in relationships that are unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. It really does.
So that's just one example. And, working with a couple of females right now, and they're either in or trying to get out of some pretty unworthy attachments. And, mm-hmm. They're this one beautiful, articulate, successful, younger end of the 40s, early 40s, her self-shaming and life messages, wait till he finds out what I'm really like.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Or he's probably sizing me up. Mm. Still attaching her value and her worth, mm-hmm. to this individual who does not find her valuable.
That's sad.
And it does go back to her upbringing and mm-hmm. never, ever, ever measuring up, in this case, to her father.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You'll find that a lot with fathers and sons as well.
Yes. And I do want to say, too, with the mom, and this oftentimes is the case working both ways, is that the dominant parent who's doing the shaming, in this case it's the father, but the mom didn't step in and defend or correct or pull her daughter aside and say, honey, this is just not okay. It's not true.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
It was that, that passive condoning of the behavior.
Mm. Well, let's talk about interpersonal impact.
Mm. Okay. Thank you, Denise. This is something that is really important in my work and in my reading, my writing and my speaking, is that, and I want to make clear, I'm not talking about interpersonal or intrapersonal. Because
sometimes
people ask me, hey, what do you mean by interpersonal worth?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so what I mean by that is that these are those deep, I call them silent, hidden, very private, personal, powerful pieces of our being. And one of the findings in the daughter study, these are losses of our worth that we don't acknowledge, or we don't verbalize, or we don't talk about. And I have to say this too, Denise, many times therapists miss these, or at least I'll say I know I did years ago, way back before I did my started doing my research on betrayal in general, is that I often would miss these with clients. So I just want to put that out there for other healthcare professionals, that we need to really be listening for these deep interpersonal losses. For the daughters, and Denise, I know because you read it, is the loss of your voice. Our voice is an external representation of the very core of who we are, of everything that makes us who we are. And if we are afraid to speak up, if we are afraid to self-check this self-shaming life message, then not only, of course, is that going to continue, but, you know, daughters said things, I felt silenced. I felt suffocated.
Oh, gee.
So the loss of voice, but there's so many others. And Denise, I want to just mention a few.
Yes, please do.
The loss of dignity.
Oh.
The loss of dignity. I had a client who, I don't want to go into details because it's very specific, but I'll just put it this way, is that she was publicly self-shamed. She was publicly shamed, very public. Okay, before it got out, she went to her parents and said, this is what has happened. And they told her to suck it up.
Oh, no.
This is a strong, she's now a grown woman, but this is very strong. But her dignity,
mm-hmm.
her identity, her innocence, her integrity, her respect, and her reputation.
Oh,
those are all interpersonal losses.
Mm.
Those in that moment were shamed. Others include, I want to put this out there, speaking of identity, inequality, gender identity, cultural equality and identity, racial equality and identity. When those are demeaned, diminished, and devalued, that goes to the core of who we are.
Did she go into deep depression?
What we've identified is it was a huge trauma. She experienced post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
And so, because she had, you know, flashbacks and nightmares, but that went unattended.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Eating disorder.
What a personal hell.
Yes. So then that begins to show up, you know, in an eating disorder, in, like I said, nightmares, flashbacks, also a substance addiction.
Oh, jeez.
So addressing these deeply rooted inner losses of interpersonal worth. And what was so mm-hmm. interesting, Denise, and this has happened with other clients, because it was minimized and dismissed,
mm-hmm.
is that when clients share these things with me, they just say it as a matter of factly.
Mm-hmm.
It like, you know, and I, of course, I'm sitting there and I'm reading their affect and their mood, and as we're peeling away other layers and things. And so I may not revisit that for another session or two, but I am going to get back to it when the client feels safe as we continue to peel away the layers.
Mm-hmm.
And in several cases, if the individuals have been, I mean, it's the first time someone has said, this must have hurt so much. This must have been excruciatingly painful. And then the tears come.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I say to them, look me in the eyes. This never, ever should have happened.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it takes a while for them to take that in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine with social media now and all the kids, the individual traumas.
Oh, Denise, don't get me started. No, I this is to me, and I do a lot of speaking, as you know, on our relationship with technology. And I do want to say right now it's a lifeline, and you know, so grateful for all that we can do through all of our technology. At the same time, it is just heartbreaking, Denise. A couple of things that I just want to mention. One is that as this relationship with technology has developed and increased over time, and this is only a natural consequence of it, but it's really important that we understand this, is that individuals are attaching their worth to external and fleeting and artificial sources of
That's
worth.
That's right. That's right. And
so,
they're instantaneous.
Yes. It's just fleeting. It's just fleeting. Now, we as adults can somewhat get that and navigate that, especially those of us who have had the prior experience of a non-digital life, and we know what real connection and authentic relationships are about. But for our digital natives who predominantly, again, have their worth attached to the number of likes, the number of retweets, follows, shares, etc., they then internalize that is that I'm not enough, I'm not popular, I don't have that outfit, I'm not going to those places, something is wrong with me. And that is not being addressed and self-checked by I don't just mean parents and guardians, I mean by other adults in their lives, that they need to have that face-to-face contact and that self-checking about what their worth, sustainable, authentic worth comes from within.
Well, we live in such a fast-paced environment with most households working. Mm-hmm. How does a parent keep up with their children on social media with regard to this conversation? Mm. I mean, they have their own passwords. You don't see what they see, what they say. I mean, it's all done in silence.
Yes.
I don't know. It's just got to be overwhelming.
Denise, it is. And yet there are really, and I'm not here to tout my books. It's why, again, I wrote Pilates for Parenting, Stretch Yourself and Strengthen Your Family. I have a whole section on this and what parents can do. Yes. And the other one, Power Down and Parent Up, it was a couple years old now or several years old, but just one thing is parents can carve out, it doesn't, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes a day to sit down with your child and say, tell me about your online life. Tell me about how are you feeling about yourself. Tell me on a scale of 1 to 10, tell me how you're feeling today. Oh, I'm feeling a 7. Well, what would make it an 8 or a 9 or a 10? Well, if I had more friends on Facebook, if I hadn't been excluded on that, you know, chat session, you start to just listen to them. Don't talk so much, but listen to them and find out what is their relationship and how that is serving them. I just want to put this out there, Denise, because it's such a beautiful exercise. The very beginning of Pilates, I have, this is a true story. It's called a heart check. And I got this from a mom that actually she was one of the editors for the daughter's book, and I just admired her and respected her so much. She had 4 children at the time. We were working together. She was editing the daughter's book, 4 children under the age of 12. Just an incredible mom. And one day when she was over and we were going over some things, her kids were out in the yard playing and just coloring and drawing and playing and stuff. And I said, Becca, what is it that you do with your kids? They are so awesome. They're so amazing. They're so incredible. And you're so in tune with them.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Holly, every night as I tuck each one of them in, is that I lay my head on their heart so that my ear is listening to their heartbeat. And I ask them, how is your heart feeling? What does your heart want to tell me? And she said, and then I listen. And depending on what they say, she might ask a follow-up question and such.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she said, we call that in our family a heart check.
I'll be darned.
What a beautiful, again, this, they went from age 12 to at that time about age 4.
Mm-hmm.
Every night. How much time does that take, Denise,
mm-hmm.
to get a reading on where your kid is at?
It's wild.
I just love that.
Yeah.
I've put that in. That's one of the first exercises that I challenge parents to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there are little ways, there's little things, and there are big things that we can do to really get a pulse on how our kids are doing and what they need from us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. How can
we
choose the words becoming enough?
Okay, thank you, Denise. When I'm talking about self-shaming, like in a workshop, or if I'm writing about it, I want to give our audiences hope, and I say that we can move from self-shaming to becoming enough. And let me just first say about the word enough, and again, Denise, I know you know this from reading the daughter's book, is that
mm-hmm.
one of the self-shaming messages that was every single chapter was that the daughters didn't feel like they didn't feel like they were enough. I'm not enough. And one daughter, even Anne, called it the not enough syndrome. So
mm-hmm.
enough is a really important word. And let me go back to becoming. Becoming is an ing word. It's a verb. And so what I love about ing words is it not only states what something is in the moment, but
mm-hmm.
also what is going to happen, what's ongoing. That's why I love the word recovering, because it's happening now and it continues. It's ongoing. It's never ending, but it's also a current state that exists. And so enough sometimes has a negative connotation, but if you look up enough, it means to be sufficient or to be as much as is needed. And so in becoming enough, when you do the healing work, you learn that your self-shaming can go into these self-healing life messages of I am enough, and I'm going to continue working on becoming enough. It's a current state and an ongoing state. And so I love that because it validates
mm-hmm.
the state that we're in, and it also honors the ongoing work that we're doing.
Yeah, I love that too.
We're never done.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add? We've just got a few minutes left.
I think just that I always want to end with just a note of hope. And I've said several times today that it is, you know, whatever issue we're working on, if we're willing to do the hard work up front, we are going to reap the benefits and the rewards in the end. I know, I trust, and I believe in that wholeheartedly. And the chapter titles of the daughter's book, I think they started off, they say what I'm saying right now, they just illustrate that these daughters began with broken, self-shaming left messages, and they ended with my life messages such as, I made me who I am, the power rests with me, I am vulnerable and I am enough, and I am the phoenix that is risen from the ashes. Daughters, as is true of so many other individuals that do the hard work, they continue doing it, and they are reaping the rewards of that.
Well, in my view, you're a national treasure.
Oh, Denise, thank you. Thank you. And you're a treasure for having people, folks like me, on and allowing our messages of hope and healing to come through. So thank you so much for your commitment, ongoing commitment in the work that you do.
Thank you. So Holly has a website, www.hollykinley.com. And then all your books are located where for purchase?
The easiest, most economical is Amazon, and especially during today in our, you know, in our restrictions and guidelines. So yeah, Amazon's the easiest place.
Thank you so much for your time. Really, I always enjoy our interviews, and I always learn so much from you.
Thank you, Denise. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care and continue your wonderful work.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. That wraps up our interview for today. Please join in again next Wednesday. No, actually, we're going to be tomorrow. We have a great guest tomorrow. And until then, please be well. Bye-bye.
We celebrate our listeners worldwide and invite you to contact Denise at www.healthmedianow.com with any questions you may have, and follow her on Twitter at Health Media Now and Facebook at Health Media Now. For those interested in an advertising campaign on her show, contact Lisa at knowledgeworkspub.com. Be sure to visit GotCancerNowWhat.com for information on Denise Messenger's award-winning book, Got Cancer? Now What?